All right, all right, all right. If you're outside, too bad for you. Oh, speaking of which, I just got a message from Beto O'Rourke. No rights for you. No rights for you. Come on in, sit down. Let's get this thing going. Hey, I'm Tom Gresham from Gun Talk Radio. Thank you guys for being here. I was just telling a friend of mine, I have so much fun here because sometimes you feel like you're just doing this and you're wondering, is anybody else doing the same thing I'm doing? And then you come here and you go, oh, I'm not alone. This is cool. Kind of recharge your batteries, get out there and do it again. So I just wanted to thank you. We're going to be doing we've got the awards luncheon. We've got some speakers for you. And no telling what's going to happen out here. So just settle in, have some fun. First order of business is let me introduce the table, and we'll come back. We have some of the folks here who are going to be speaking. Just on the end, we have, of course, as you might recognize, 20-year professional pitcher Kurt Schilling. Thank you, sir. Next to him, the lead plaintiff on two landmark Second Amendment Foundation cases, Ezell versus Chicago, Ron Ezell. Now, I'm starting to feel just a little bit outnumbered here with the whole men-women mix here. I'm just saying. Robin Sandoval from editor of, do I have this right? Executive director of A Girl and a Gun. And did I get, you're also editor of Women and Guns? All right, editor of Women and Guns as well. Thank you. Whoever this guy is. Alan Gottlieb, Second Amendment Foundation. Amanda Suffolk, he's the host and producer of Eye on the Target Radio. Cheryl Todd, she is the co-host of Gun Freedom Radio. And a gentleman you're going to be hearing from just a little bit later, representing President Trump, Mac Presso. Matt, thank you for being here. It's kind of weird coming in middle of the day like this because I had this speech all written. I feel like Mark Walters. I have torn it up and rewritten it two or three times because I keep going, well, that was a really good thing. I was going to say that, but they said that. That was really, no, I was going to say that too. So, there were two or three things said recently, the last hour, and I thought, I'll try to pull a couple of things together, just ideas. It's kind of what I try to do on the radio is take ideas from here and there and put it together so that it makes some sense. Sometimes you get in the middle of the whirlwind and it's hard to see what's going on. And if anything, that's kind of what I try to do. We talked about, Chris Chang said, you know, San Francisco board list the NRA as a domestic terrorist organization. It's kind of funny on one hand, it's kind of irritating on the other hand, but I'm here to suggest that it's something more than that. It's somewhat terrifying is what it actually is and should be a lot concerning. Here's why. Historically, if you want to do something terrible to an identifiable group of people, you have to make them the other. Think about throughout history, whether it's based on color, religion, affiliation, before you can round them up, before you can do terrible things to them, you have to make them seem somewhat less than. Not quite us. Those people aren't like us. They actually aren't us. They may not even be, going back to historical references, they may not even be quite human. Well, what is the identifiable label you can put on somebody today that allows you to be put on a list? Terrorist. You could be charged with making a terroristic threat for threatening to punch somebody in the nose. Huh. Interesting. No fly list. Don't know how you get on, don't know how you get off. But if you could be listed as a terrorist because you belong to a particular group, we can put you on the list, the watch list, the terrorist watch list. My point in all this is to say that while it's easy to be dismissive of this, I would suggest that maybe there's something else going on here, something larger going on. Whether it's orchestrated or not, I never know. I think sometimes somebody on the other side comes up with an idea and they just run with it. But the idea of essentially marginalizing, minimizing us. You know, and it's that old big lie deal. If you say it long enough and loud enough, some people will start believing it. So take that idea, okay? That whole idea of making people appear to be the other and what we could do to them. People say, well, that would never happen here. Really? I would offer that an awful lot of American citizens of Japanese descent in World War II would tend to disagree with you as they got marched off to the camps in the United States of America. So take that, and I'm remembering a few years ago, I got a call. Actually, the folks from the National Shooting Sports Foundation called me and said, hey, the guys at MSNBC want to interview somebody about guns. I go, really, why me? You're going to throw me to the wolves? They said, yeah, well, we figured you could do it. So, okay. So I take the call. We want to talk about the 10 most popular guns in America, MSNBC says. I said, okay, well, I can do that. We're going to start off with the Remington 870. They said, oh, no, just handguns. Oh, I said, why just handguns? The exact phrase, because handguns are edgier. Okay, I see where we're going now. Cool. We're going to do it. This is going to be a hit job. But I got them, because there's a whole lot of them. There's one of me, and that means I can attack in all directions. It's cool. So I say, yeah, come on down to Louisiana. This is going to be fun. We're going to talk. They bring down the crew, MSNBC, the whole NBC that. First thing I do, I say, look, I got a couple of buddies. We ought to go out and shoot with them. Okay. Let's see, it was Jim Clark Jr. and Jerry Michalik. So I take them to the range and I say, well, all right, put the cameras down. So what do you mean, put the cameras down? An hour later, the producer, the director, the sound guy, and the camera guys are knocking down steel plates with guns and having a ball. Well, you know what changed when I did that? They were no longer doing a story about those people, because they had become those people. So we're having this conversation with the producer, Keith, and he says, you know, I don't think I know anybody who owns a gun. And I said, well, you know, I don't think I know anybody who doesn't own a gun. And I said, but here's the deal, Keith. You actually know a lot of people who own guns. He says, no. He says, I live in Manhattan. I said, yes. Half the people you know own guns. He says, that's insane. Are you kidding me? So I'm just telling you, the difference is where I live, we feel free to talk about it. Where you are, your doctor won't tell you that he or she owns guns. You know, your lawyer won't talk about that. They don't feel free to do that. Baloney. I forget about it. 2 weeks later, I get a call from Keith Greenberg, MSNBC. He says, Tom, I did your test. I didn't even know what he's talking about. What are you talking about? He said, half the people I know own guns. Yeah, I know. You just don't know. And that's why it's easy for them to think of us as the other. Think about that. Because they think, I don't know anybody who owns guns. So what can we do with that information? I guess this is the action item for you. And I would just offer this. And there was a lot of great information about, you know, contact the media. You know, we created the True Squad with Gun Talk Radio. We got 350,000 volunteers, and our motto is, a lie left unchallenged becomes the truth. So we adopted a no-shrug policy. Whenever we see a story that's incorrect or slanted, you don't just shrug and go, oh, that's just the way it is. No, you challenge it every time, politely, strongly, but you challenge it. Two things I would offer or ask you to consider. One is to make yourself better at what we're doing, and you're here, so that's you're doing that. by better, I mean understanding that when you're talking with someone who is maybe anti-gun, first of all, it's not necessarily a bad person. Maybe somebody just has bad information, okay? Also understand that, I don't know why, but some folks on our side feel like the way you win is to make them admit that they're wrong. Not gonna happen. You don't beat someone into submission. You lead them to a conclusion. You can invite them to the range. You can say, hey, let's go out and do some shooting. Interesting, NSSF did a study, they said, a survey. Half the women said that if they were invited to go shooting, they would. Why are we not inviting them all to go shooting? Because let me just tell you, I call it vaccination. Because if you have gone out shooting and you have had a good time, no one at that point can tell you that guns and gun people are bad, because your personal experience completely blows that away. So every one of us has an opportunity to vaccinate people against that. The other thing is, remember this. There's an opportunity here when you're, and if you're talking to like a hardcore, I'm going to take your guns away, yada, 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 there are usually, whether it's online or wherever else, there are usually other people around. Imagine that I'm sitting here talking with an anti-gunner and I'm, you know, we're having this conversation. I'm not trying to convince him or her. I'm doing it so you guys can hear it. Figure out who your audience is. You're not trying to beat them into submission. You're trying to use them as an opportunity to present your good information. Who are you talking to? Not that person. You're talking to whoever else is listening. And I don't care if it's in a bar, or at the PTA, or wherever else. One other thing, and I loved it, came up in the last panel. Take every opportunity to bring up the fact that you are a gun owner and a shooter. When somebody sits next to you on the airline, do not let them out of the seat without bringing it up. Captive audience, I'm telling you, you got them for an hour, 3 hours. Where are they gonna go? You got one-on-one. And because of that, you can take your time. I did have one lady sit next to me. She had the beret, she had the shawl, the whole deal. She was a university professor. She sits down. I've got my Guns and Ammo magazine out there. She says, huh, I never thought I'd sit next to a gun nut. Swear, that's what she said. It was one of those times, you know, usually I'll engage, and I just wasn't in the mood. And I just said, well, you know, I never thought I was going to be sitting next to a bigot. There it is. So I guess that would be my call to action for all of you. Every encounter at the grocery store, checkout line, wherever it is, hey, I was going out shooting. I did some shooting. You know, I just bought a new gun, yada, yada, yada. You will be amazed how many positive reactions you will get. But we can't hide. We're in the right. So bring it up. Be out there. You know, we're on the front lines of this thing. So I just want to thank all of you for doing that. You're here, you're doing that part of it, you're getting the intellectual ammunition here, so take it out there and use it. Thank you. All right, it's really fun. I actually got to introduce this gentleman last year. There are just some people who, in the annals of sports, the name just cuts through everything else. When you've been a professional pitcher for 20 years, you've been to 4 World Series, won 3 of them, 3,000 strikeout category, it goes on and on. And then you go on to, well, you can use this public persona, this megaphone you have, to speak out for the rights of people. And when people try to beat you down, when the media says, you know, we'd like to do that interview with you, but could you take that Trump hat off before you do the interview? That ain't happening. Let me just introduce our friend, Kirk Schilling.
All right, for those of you still eating, I'm probably going to do something rather annoying. And by the way, there are 2 more flags here than I've seen at all the Democratic debates combined. But I would like to start my speech with the Pledge of Allegiance. It's not said enough, and it's something I'm always proud to do, so let's stand and do it together.
Oh,
All right, here we go. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. 6
play,
words.
Play ball.
6 words from the end of that. With liberty and justice for all. 240-some years, that goal, that objective has never changed for conservatives, for Americans. And today, for the first time in my life, I'm hearing and seeing things I never thought possible in my country. Raise your hand if you know a man, know the name Gary Willis. Gary Willis was a 61-year-old Vietnam veteran from Ferndale, Maryland, who was shot and killed by police officers who were brought to his house by a neighbor, the red flag law, to obtain and take away his legally obtained firearms. Our country is trying to change, and none of it for the better. The things that we fought for, and the things that we live for, and the things that we breathe for, matter as much, if not more, today than they ever have. And sitting up here with people who are making a difference in the world in a way, and this, listen, yes, this is about guns, but at the core of this issue, we all know it's about people. This has always been about people. I've never, ever seen a gun, and today, and I don't think I ever will, use itself. But we have red flag laws happening in this country. California, Washington, Oregon, Indiana, Connecticut, with no due process, you can lose your legally obtained firearms. Deerfield, Illinois tried to make legal, law-abiding citizens on Sunday, felons on Monday. There's 18 other states considering it. And it dawned on me as I'm reading this article, mistake number one, in The Guardian, and they were outside of an NRA convention conference, and they were interviewing people as they went in. And they were asking them, as gun owners, what pisses you off the most? What makes you the most upset? And they got a ton of different answers. The, you know, lack of knowledge that the left has on gun laws and gun safety and stuff. And one of them said, and this is what the writer wrote. One of the respondents said, I don't like to be called a redneck. And the writer wrote after this, there were probably only 2 or 3 attendants that were actually rednecks because we only saw 2 or 3 people wearing overalls. Yeah, the party of inclusion. But here's the thing. You talked about the NRA. I am the NRA. You are the NRA. I had a chance to meet John Lott, the Crime Prevention Research Center police. And I say this, it's hard to say this because I have such an immense amount of respect for police officers, but this puts us in perspective. There are firearm violations committed by 16.5 police officers out of every 100,000. Concealed carry permit holders in Texas and Florida commit 2.4 firearm violations per 100,000. We are the most law-abiding citizens in this country. And we've been labeled terrorists. I looked up Patriot a couple weeks ago and Googled to find Patriot as a white nationalist. They are, listen, you're living in a state where illegal immigration is immigration. They're not the same things. They never have been. A Muslim and a Muslim extremist are not the same things. They never have been. But it's exact, when you, this is, I'm starting to speak at a company, a group called the Young Americans Foundation, Ben Shapiro, Candace Owens, and going around to colleges, and I realize this is absolutely a battle for information. The left now controls how it flows, where it flows, and it is, as a father of 4 kids, I don't know that it's ever been a more challenging time to raise kids right than now. And I watch my 4 kids, so I'm going to tell you a quick story because I'm really proud of this story. My son, my 17-year-old, who's the last one left in high school, is in a sociology class, and the professor was talking about the genocide of the Native Americans and how the Pilgrims and the Spanish were horribly guilty, and we should, you know, along the reparations line of discussion. And my son raises his hand and he says, "Excuse me, sir, but if I'm not mistaken, every country in the history of the world that has ever been founded was founded on conquest." And he kind of looked at him, kind of odd, and he said, "That doesn't make it right, but how far back are we supposed to go? How much are we supposed to keep alive?" And the discussion is, listen, this is a room full of people, black, white, Latinos, men and women, an inclusive group. We don't care what color you are, what race you are, who you worship, why you worship, who you sleep with. Are you a law-abiding citizen? I'm good. Are you a law-abiding citizen? But when you're dealing with a group of people who cannot, they for the life of them, cannot understand, shall not be infringed. They don't. They get it. Obviously, they get it. But when you have a Swalwell and a Pelosi and just the list of idiots goes on and on and on. They're finally in a place where the media, they've conspired with the media to the point where they're no longer afraid to tell us what they're after. I like that. That's why I like openly bigoted racist people to be openly bigoted. I want to know who they are. I want to know who they are, because then I don't have to. That's the beauty of capitalism, is it not? I don't shop at Walmart anymore. But we get to make that choice. And this group of people on the left has the audacity to tell us, a group of people, by the way, that we now know, tried to overthrow a democratic election. And that's not a conspiracy theory. That's fact. We know that they did. The left wants us to give these people more power, more control of our firearms. There's only one way they're getting them. And you know how that is. And the thing about that is, I believe we're getting to a nexus here. And so my biggest fear, I don't see somebody out there de-escalating any of this. Trump is in the White House. He's going to win by a bigger margin than he won in 2016 and 2020. And the nutcases on the left are just going to get nuttier and say more. Not, I don't know how much stupider they can get. I know that's not a word, but the stuff I love the fact that MSNBC and CNN and all of the news stations are giving them airtime, because every time Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez opens her mouth, a conservative voter is born. And think about that. She graduated from BU. College graduates, I got to tell you this. I live in Massachusetts, so you can imagine. It took me, I think, 14 decades to get my concealed carry permit, but I got it. I found in the last 10 years the dumbest people I've ever met usually have Harvard somewhere in their name, in their title. And it's a group of elitists. It's a group of, they really honestly, the deplorable thing couldn't have happened at a better time, because that's honestly what they think of us. And when you look at, I have to laugh when I look at the last presidential debates of the 2016, we had a Latino, we had a Cuban, we had a woman, we had a black man, we had a white man. They had three rich old white people. And they were calling us the and it's true. I mean, Goebbels said it for Hitler and the Nazi. You say something long enough and people believe it. All you had to do was turn the channel on yesterday and watch that young lady in Washington talking about climate change. God bless her for the effort. Just like the clown from Florida, the kid from Parkland, who they don't know what they're arguing for. They're arguing for socialist policies that they don't understand. And listen, raise your hand in this room if you want everybody to have health care. I want everybody to have health. We all want everybody to have health care. We live in the real world. We live in the real world. And I got to tell you this. I don't want $1 of my taxes to go anywhere until every veteran in this country has a home, and health care. That is probably, for me, the most embarrassing thing about my country. On any night, there's over 34,000 homeless veterans in this nation. That's repulsive. We're better than that. And you, and then I say that, and then I look at California, and I was chuckling at it too until I realized what a disaster that's become. The fact that they're giving tens of millions of dollars to illegals, and they have the worst homeless problem in the country. California has over 50% of this nation's homeless population. And they're run by, and you ask how Maxine Waters or Pelosi or any of them can get elected, just watch Hollywood for 20 minutes and it becomes clear. The morals, the ethics, the integrity and the honor, those are punchlines in Hollywood now. And I would like to think we as a group value those words as much today as we ever have. And you know, we just said the Pledge of Allegiance. I guarantee you, there are people, well, very few liberals are watching this, but the ones that are, were scoffing and rolling their eyes because it's a joke to them. The flag, our flag, is a worldwide symbol of freedom. And I have never, ever, in my lifetime, heard of an American citizen fleeing to Russia. Our men and women are buried in graveyards all over the globe. They died for countries and for people they never met, they would never know. And I would like to think our commander-in-chief never sent them abroad lightly. But the fact of the matter is, no one else has the guts or the people to stand up to the bullies. I live in a country that makes the greatest human beings alive. And they serve a nation that has values. The Declaration of Independence is the greatest document ever penned. It had a lot of flaws when it began. But we amended it. That's how you do it. That's how you're supposed to do it. And once again, the Second Amendment, I'll finish with this. And you've heard him said a billion times, and I'm going to say it again. We have all of the other ones because of the Second. And that will never change and can never change. Thank you very much for inviting me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
He's still throwing strikes, isn't he? What do you think of that? Holy cow. Well, we're in the era of Donald Trump. And I know there are people who say, well, you know, is he really Second Amendment? Is he really this? I don't know. Let's talk numbers. How's the number 150 sound to you? Judges. 150 judges. I also like the number 2. 2's a good number. Gorsuch, Kavanaugh. We could do that. And it sure looks like we've got a lot of more good things coming. Joining us right now to talk from the, he's the director of targeted engagement for the Trump victory campaign. I like the sound of that. Matt Brassaw joins us right now. Please welcome him.
Well, I appreciate y'all having me today, Alan. I appreciate you giving me the invite. One thing that I want to revert everyone's attention to real quick is whenever we were leading into the 2016 presidential election, GOP primary-elect Donald Trump had a number of campaign promises, something that everyone in the country was like, look, he's just another politician. He's going to talk about all these things that he wants to accomplish in this country, and we're going to see what we get. Well, 2.5 years later, you look at our economy. You look at the job growth in this country. You look at what we've done from a foreign policy perspective. You look what we've done from a national security perspective. You look what we've done from an immigration perspective, healthcare, veterans, judicial appointments, as you mentioned, and now fighting for your Second Amendment rights. These are all things that you can find in Google, the list of accomplishments, and it goes on and on. I could spend all 10 minutes up here talking about the accomplishments that the president has had thus far in his presidency. I know for a fact that he's fighting for you and I as he goes to work every day. And so that's why it gives me the great privilege and, in my mind, the greatest job in the country to go around talking about the accomplishments, getting folks involved as we head into the presidential reelect. So there's a number of you in the room that I have had the privilege of meeting, a number of incredible organizations that are represented here, and a number of folks that I continue wanting to meet, because look, it's going to take a group effort. Everyone in this room has talked about a grassroots effort moving forward and developing those relationships within your own communities. It all starts within your own neighborhood, right? It doesn't start from a national perspective. You come back home to wherever you are from, and you build out your relationship within your own neighborhood, and then it builds out from there. That's what it's all about. That's how you all have created your organizations, and I can assure you that's something that we are in the process of moving forward with from a campaign perspective. A number of you have been called upon from the White House to discuss 2A legislation. There's a couple of you that are going to be testifying this next Wednesday in front of the House Judiciary Committee. These things don't just happen because you're just a random person. You all are respected, you all are revered within the 2A movement, and something that I can assure you that myself will be tapping on all of you, because it's going to take a group effort moving forward. We hear that, look, every debate, the Democrats give me my talking points. I mean, you just literally write it off the page. And so it's something that, but we need to continue the soundboard. We are a society that we move on to things very quickly because there's a lot going on in our world. And so it's up to all of us with the memberships that y'all represent to keep your folks within your specific states of the understanding, look, the Democratic Party does in fact want to take your guns. It's no longer a talking point, and it's no longer just a scare tactic, but it is absolutely something that they want to accomplish if they were to win in 2020. So that leads me to, what are we doing? What is the campaign doing right now? We are building the largest grassroots effort that this country has ever seen. Look, there are several more of me that are scouring the country right now, all working in a concise effort to move what is called the Trump Victory Leadership Initiative. It's a program that we are developing across this country to engage and activate the grassroots movement in all 50 states, for that matter. Whenever you look at what's going on from a campaign perspective, one of the top priorities is registering new voters. That is something that we don't like to talk about it, but in 2008 and 2012, before then President Obama was reelected, they got out and registered voters. That is our biggest effort right now, is to make happen, get out, register voters, or update your voter registration. There's a number of folks within your own community that you can push over the edge to make sure that that happens. Whenever you register a new voter, the average percentage of them going to vote the very next election is about 85%. That's huge. So why wouldn't you move on something like that, trying to get your friends, family, folks in your neighborhood involved and get them registered to vote? Within the Trump Victory Leadership Initiative, we're also big on volunteer engagement. Look, whenever President Obama stormed the scene, he activated 2.3 million volunteers across this country, a feat that no one had ever seen before. All this community activism, no one knew what community activism was until he got reelected two times. And so I can assure you that that's something that we are in the process of doing it much better than they did, because you're probably going to see, or you are going to see, the largest grassroots, the largest movement that this country has ever seen, trying to tap into 2.5, if not 3 million volunteers across this country to reelect the president. We all have a constitutional right. It's the right to go vote. Why would you not tap into that? Other locations around the world would absolutely love to have that ability. And so we as Americans have that right, and that's something that we need to activate moving forward and get all of our friends. Again, it's a broken record, but it's everyone up here is talking about the grassroots movement, tapping into the grassroots, because that's the only way that you affect change within this country. And so that's what it's You're probably going to get a lot of phone calls from us moving forward. You're probably going to get a lot of door knocks from us moving forward. And just understand, it is all with an effort to get everyone to ultimately go vote. And so, I mean, moving forward, I'll be honest with you, there's a number of you that I want to partner with within your specific states to do just that. And if I'll be in the lobby after, if you want to come and talk to me. But there's also another piece that you all, in this given moment, if you want more information about what's going on or you want me to contact you, go to www.gop.com/2A. So it's going to ask you if you want to get involved and protect your Second Amendment rights moving forward, ultimately sending you over to me so that I can engage you within our teams that are across the country. We are, in fact, in 17 battleground states, so to speak, but active within all 50 states, because I think that there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of support for the president across the country. The website, one more time, is www.gop.com/2A. So I'll leave you with this story here. One of my wife and I's favorite things to do in Washington, D.C. is walk the mall. Okay, if you've ever been to D.C., there's just a wealth of history. And whenever you're walking along the mall, you can't help but be in awe. You've got the Capitol behind you, you've got the Washington Monument, World War II, and then Lincoln on down. Now, as many of you know, nothing in Washington is done by chance. Everything has a meaning. Everything is done to a precise effort. So just to amplify that, many folks don't know, whenever you step up to the Lincoln Memorial, you have the second inaugural address, and then you have the Gettysburg Address. Okay, 47 years ago, just so happens that there's 87 steps that lead up to Lincoln himself. Okay, there's 36 pillars that wrap the Lincoln Memorial. Why? 36 states had ratified the Constitution whenever President Lincoln died. That is everywhere across our city. That is everywhere within the district. Everything happens for a precise reason. So don't think that anything that happens within the walls of Congress don't happen by chance, because they do. And that's why a number of you need to continue affecting change, meeting with your lawmakers with regards to our 2A rights, because that's where change is going to happen. So a couple weeks back, my wife and I were walking down the mall, and lo and behold, as some of you have probably seen Marine One flying around D.C. because it's a no-fly zone, so it's very obvious whenever you have Marine One. So if it's by itself, there's somebody in it, but it's not the president. Whenever you have three helicopters flying together, the president is included in that effort. And so we were walking, and as they come and circle the Washington Monument, and two helicopters fly on either side of the White House, you have one that comes in very slowly, and that's, in fact, Marine One with the president on it. And so as he guides into the White House, you can't help but notice that he's got the Capitol on one side, he's got the Washington Monument, and then he's got the Lincoln Memorial and World War II on the other side. And he's reminded of what this country is founded on a daily basis. And he's absolutely fighting for you and I on a daily basis. And so this is our opportunity to come and fight for him and get him reelected in 2020. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. I don't know if you guys heard, I just got the text. Thank you, Dan. Beto O'Rourke was interviewed again, and the interviewer says, so the people in Texas say that they want you to take their guns. He says, yeah, man, and it's crazy. He says, they keep coming up to me and saying, come and take it. At this point, let me introduce the man who actually put all this together many, many, many years ago, friend to all of us, certainly a leader, the founder and the head of the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms and the Second Amendment Foundation, Alan Gottlieb.
Stop it. Okay, sit down. This isn't about me, it's about you. Except it does say up here on the podium Please start your speech by saying your name.
Hear, hear.
I'm the bow tie gun guy. You know, listening to the speakers this morning and talking with a lot of you out in the hall, it dawned on me that while the other side, the gun grabbers, have a bunch of billionaires and a lot more cash than we do, we have a lot more talent than they do. This is actually my favorite part of GRPC, is the award ceremony. And if some of you have been here in past ones have heard me say that. And it's really my favorite part because there's an awful lot of people in our movement that work on our protecting our rights on a daily basis and never get a dime for doing it. And they're out there devoting their lives to it. And I've watched people lose families over it, lose jobs over it. It's amazing the effort that goes in by grassroots people. And they never get any recognition. And this is like the only time that people get recognition and in the movement. And so it's really my pleasure to work on this awards ceremony because it means an awful lot to a lot of people and it pumps up a lot of people's energy levels and keeps them out there working and fighting for our two-way rights. So let me start. It's a long list. But let me start. One of the awards we give out every year is the Scholar of the Year. And there's a number of people out there that work every day to develop data and statistics to give us ammunition to be able to win the gun rights battle. But there's one person who really, really, really stands out, and that's John Lott.
It's an honor to get the award. You know, I just kind of backed into doing this stuff on guns. I'd never really been very interested in it. And I had some students when I was teaching at Wharton. I made the mistake of telling them we were ahead in the syllabus. And so they came up to me after class and said, well, if you got extra time, maybe you could go and talk about gun control. And they said, they realized it wasn't exactly on point for the class, but I figured, well, you know, I could read more in the area. I'd read some papers in the area, but they weren't very good. And so anyway, I just kind of got into it, almost stopped about six times on the original project that we were working on. And then I just happened to get a call from a guy named Dennis Couchon, who was a reporter for USA Today, who I'd gotten to know when I was at the US Sentencing Commission. And he would call me up every 6 months or so and just ask me questions. So anyway, he called me up, asked me questions, and he said, well, what are you working on? And I said, well, I just finished this paper. He said, send it to me. It sounds interesting. And about a week later, it was on the front page of USA Today. And we were kind of off to the races. But even then, there's basically two things that have kept me in on this. One is the fact that people have referred to it as my stray cat syndrome. And that is, I guess I kind of convinced myself that if I didn't do some of this stuff, nobody else would. And so, because I've been involved in a lot of academic debates. You know, I've been in a lot of universities before I got involved in the gun stuff. And I just had never seen so much false information on it. I'm talking too long, I know. So anyway... Anyway, I appreciate it, and thanks. The only thing I'd say is there's so much work that needs to be done. I mean, you wouldn't believe the hundreds of millions of dollars that are being poured into research on the other side of this. And anyway, I appreciate Alan and everybody else here. Sorry for talking so long.
And don't worry, you'll be able to hear a lot more from John later on today. The next one is Journalist of the Year. And these are, we have a number of people out there these days now pushing Second Amendment rights in the media and doing research and getting things accomplished for us. This person is a two-time award winner over the years, and it's A.W.R. Harkins from Breitbart. A.W.R., I hope you're in the room. That was the two-way dance.
Thank you all. And thank you, Alan. Treasure your friendship. Proud of John. Proud of everybody, really. I think John put it so well. There's so much to do. I think it's easy. I remember when I started writing with Breitbart, I had to be jealous about what I was doing. I had to fight, be sure I dug my beat out. This is what I do, so on and so forth. And then the longer you do it, the more you realize what John said. There's so much to be done. And that's why it's so good to see a room full of people here, because it's going to take every one of us and the people we recruit and the people they recruit. And so it's great to be on a team fighting together. I always try to respond that way. People email me. Someone emails me every day. Thank you for this. Thank you for that. And I try to respond. We fight together. And that's what I hope you remember, because freedom is going to require every one of us. But thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
I said I hope AWR was in the room to get the award, because we don't tell anybody ahead of time they're getting these awards. So it's a surprise for everybody. And many times they're out in the lobby talking, and they're not in the room. The next award we're giving out, last year was the first time we gave it out. It was the Hall of Fame Award. And maybe we should call it the Curt Schilling Hall of Fame Award, because he was our first awardee who received the award last year. This year it goes to somebody here in Arizona, somebody who set up the first Second Amendment city, so to speak, in the United States. And that's Mayor Dusty Escobel from Tombstone, Arizona. Unfortunately, he can't be here to accept it, but he has a representative here in the room to accept it for him, who has come up, and I'll let him introduce himself for a second and tell everybody what he does.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Gordon Anderson, and I'm proud to call Alan Gottlieb a friend and Mark Walters a friend and Curt Schilling. I've gotten to know Curt Schilling, wonderful guy, great human being, and we're all hoping he says yes, if you know what I mean. We'd love to have him here in Arizona. And first of all, in January of 2017, the mayor of Tombstone, Arizona, and its city council proclaimed itself as a Second Amendment city, as a more... More specifically, America's Second Amendment City. And this proclamation can be found at www.secondamendmentcity.com. The proclamation went all over the world, literally 100 million people, 200 million people. London Times even carried it. Washington Post, Washington Times, you name it. And we're proud to be here, and I thank you very much.
The next is a series of awards that I'm going to give out, call the people all up at one time, that we give out for people who have done an awful lot of work out in the vineyards for us during the calendar year, defending Second Amendment rights. And I'd like to recognize the following people. They please come up to accept a Defender of Liberty Award. Amanda Suffolkall. Rhonda Ezell. Dave Kopp. Freddie Riel. Mark Penick. Robin Sandoval. Derek LeBlanc. Dean Weingarten. Paul Markle. And last but not least, Adam Kraut. Now, I will be really surprised if I turn around and find all 10 of them standing here.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
We scored, I think. I want to thank all of you for your excellent efforts this year in defending our two-way rights and everything you've done in various areas of defense of our liberty. And that's why we sort of call this the Defender of Liberty Award. Thank you very much. Stay here until you get your actual real award. It'll be handed out behind me. I have Robin. Robin? We'll let them clear before we go to the next one. A lot of these awards turn up on Facebook pages and other places on the internet. Every time I'm out there surfing the internet, all of a sudden, poof, there's an award that pops up from a previous year. Yes. Okay. The next one we're giving out has a little personal sentiment to all of us on the Second Amendment Foundation staff. It's the Ray Carter Blogger of the Year Award. Ray was one of our employees who passed away from cancer, who was basically our blogger for a number of years out of our office. And so we've established this award in his name, and he is sorely missed in our office. This year, the award is going to somebody who's maybe not a traditional blogger, but when you're talking about new media, things change daily. And so it's a form of blogging that isn't really necessarily blogging. But this year's Blogger of the Year Award goes to Charlie Cook for Riding Shotguns with Charlie. He didn't know he was getting the award, so he didn't bring his trumpet with him.
Yeah, I can do this without the trumpet, right? I have no idea these things are coming, and this is great, Alan. He's completely true about that. I have a video channel that I call Riding Shotgun with Charlie, and I ride around with people and talk about gun stuff. And it's cool to stand up here in front of 1,000 people and talk about it. I also make videos where I play the trumpet and shoot a gun at the same time. I call it multitasking. I will tell you, In 2013, I took an advanced pistol handling class with Rob Pincus, and I'm sure he never realized that I would be one-handed reloading while I play the trumpet at the same time. So it's a complete honor to have this. Thank you all very much. Thanks, Alan.
Oops. I keep lowering the microphone. The next one is an award we give out annually called the Defender of the Constitution. And this year is going out to an attorney who's been around lots and lots of years, doing lots and lots of work for Second Amendment work, lots of court cases, lots of amicus briefs. But he also does an awful lot behind the scenes to help young attorneys come up in the Second Amendment ranks to defend our gun rights, and mentors lots of people, and is engaged a lot in a lot of court cases that have gone on in organizing amicus curiae briefs for various suits that various organizations file. I'd like to give this award to Dave Coppell.
One of the reasons I've been around as long as I have was because back in the early days when I was starting out in the late 1980s, I met Alan, and he was really encouraging and helped me out as a scholar, you know, sometimes paying my airfare to attend a conference. And he's been a fantastic guy to work with. And it's both in the olden days and today, when something needs to get done legally, we need to get an amicus brief written, we need to get an expert witness, whatever needs to be done. Alan is there, he understands, and he's one of the truly great people who has both a great strategic vision and a lot of tactical skills. And the size of this conference and how it's grown over the years is a testament to that. And so I'm happy to fight on the legal front and really encouraged by how much this conference and SAF in general have done to create great grassroots and to nurture legal and research projects. So, thank you.
But I have to remind Dave, this wasn't about me, it's about him. He's the one that's done the work. Thank you. The next award I'd like to give out is Distinguished Service Award. And this one really is one I give out with great pleasure because it's somebody who's worked out there a whole lot, who is without a big ego, that doesn't take credit for what he does, make sure everybody else has the credit. You heard him speak earlier this morning, Jim Irvine from the Buckeye Firearms Association. There's really nice inscriptions and descriptions of the awards, which I've not read out loud because of time constraints, but I apologize.
I just want to thank all of the great people of the groups, and not only in Buckeye, but all the other state groups that are always pushing us and making us better. It's you guys that make us who we are. I'm glad to accept this on your behalf. Thank you.
The next one goes to the Grassroots Organization of the Year. And this one is to an organization that started from scratch not very many years ago and has become the dominant force in gun rights in their state, in a state that's become a very battleground for gun rights and has done yeoman's work. I'd like to give this award to the Nevada Firearms Coalition. And Don Turner will come up and accept that award on behalf of his organization.
On behalf of the gun owners of Nevada, we want to thank Alan and the Second Amendment Foundation and all of you for your support. We send Alan a lot of emails. I think sometimes he's thinking, oh my God, another email.
But thanks to all that great work and all those great emails, it's less work for me to have to worry about and do from our end, but he takes care of Nevada very, very well. Thank you. The next one goes to our Grassroots Activist of the Year. And this is an activist who's done a lot of innovative things in his state. And it's very difficult sometimes to do innovative things in a state where you're really not welcome at all and gun rights virtually don't exist. It goes to somebody in a state that was actually the first state to ratify the Bill of Rights and maybe the last state to recognize them. New Jersey activist Alexander Rubian.
Well, I'm getting an award for being innovative, and I can't think of what to say. So, but thank you for everybody and all the support we get nationally. I think the common theme here is unity and working with many state groups. And, even in New Jersey, you can have victories, and that should be a beacon of light for all of our Second Amendment rights. So thank you to everybody for all your support. This means everything to us, and let's keep fighting and keeping our eye on the prize. Thank you, Alan.
This next one is our Affiliate of the Year Award, and it's going to go to a group that's done unbelievable work in their state. It's a battleground state for 2020, and I'm sure this organization is going to make sure that gun owners in that state, in fact, make sure that their electoral votes fall into the right column. Buckeye Firearms Association. And I think we're going to have a few representatives come on up because they all deserve the recognition. Candy, you're holding up the program. Get up here. Before I hand them the award, I also have to say thank them for another thing that they do. Before we all got in here, they were mostly responsible for setting up this room. We'll save a little bit of time there. The next award goes to the Gun Rights Defender of the Year. This can be chosen from various categories, from elected officials, journalists, researchers. You can go from a lot of different areas. Person has done a lot of work, both publicly up front, where you've read about, you read his bylines, but also lots of research and things that go in to come up with the news stories, breaking things, things that hold the other side accountable. I'd like to give this one to Stephen Gutowski from the Washington Free Beacon. Who is here today incognito wearing his sunglasses.
Thank you. I was just outside, so these are practical, not just stylish. I really appreciate this, and I look forward to another year of doing my best to inform you all of what's happening with your gun rights. So thank you again.
This is sort of a reverse on what goes on outside. You know, the outside, the saying is, see something, say something. Here is to get something, say something. The next one goes to the Gun Rights Legislator of the Year. And this one is being given to somebody who obviously isn't here because they're in Washington, D.C., and things are kind of busy and tight there right now and can't be here, but we will make sure it gets presented to them in their office. It's going to go to Senator Mitch McConnell. And let me explain a little bit of reasons why. Confirming 150 judges that are almost entirely 100% pro-gun in this amount of time is a miracle. Shepherding that through the Congress, the Senate, is not an easy task with the opposition and obstructionism that he's faced. That is a long-lasting legacy for the right to keep your arms that's going to outlive our lifetimes. The second thing was very recently that you had some Democratic senators do an amicus brief on the court case for the New York City anti-gun law that they have on transporting your firearm outside your home, telling the court not on the merits of why they should not hear the case, but on the merits, so to speak, is if you hear the case, we're going to upend how the Supreme Court works, and we're going to enlarge it and pack it with anti-gun judges. It was a direct threat to the court. Somehow, Mitch McConnell, virtually overnight, was able to get all 53 Republican senators to sign a letter to the Supreme Court denouncing it. Getting everybody on board is like an unbelievable thing, especially in about a 24-hour cycle. So for that, Mitch McConnell is getting our Legislative of the Year award. Next one is the Bill of Rights Award, and it's going to go to somebody here in the state of Arizona, somebody who stands up for our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, particularly our Second Amendment rights, and it's Pinal County Sheriff Mark Lamb, who unfortunately, due to being on duty, can't be here, but has a representative here to accept the award on his behalf. Is it? Yes? Or was supposed to have somebody here to accept the award on his behalf. Is there a deputy sheriff in the room? Here we come. Come up, sir.
Okay. Hello. My name is Sam Ferris. I'm an operations commander from Cochise County. Sheriff, we're down on the border. We've got 83 miles of border. We share a common mission with... thank you. We work very closely with our colleagues in Pinal County and work very closely with Sheriff Mark Lamb. He's a great guy, and if he were here, he could, like any elected official, could give you more information on the Second Amendment than you probably want to hear. You're already probably experts anyway. But on behalf of him, thank you. I'm just going to change the name to mine on the bottom. And then...
The next one is our Lifetime Achievement Award. And this is one that sometimes I don't like to give out because usually it means you've been around a while and you're getting older. And I'm getting older, too, and so it's starting to hurt. But this person really needs no introduction because you know him very, very well, and he's sitting right next to me, Tom Gresham.
Wow. You're sneaky. Wow. Didn't see that coming. Mel, thank you. Got a question for you. If somebody in this room needs help with a Second Amendment issue where they are, is there anybody in this room who would help them? There it is. I got lucky. Or as I said yesterday, I cheated. I grew up in a gun rights house. My dad was a gun writer. He was a Second Amendment guy. I was debating the Dodd bill before it became Gun Control Act of 1968. It's just part of who I am, but I've been lucky. I mean, I get to hang around with people like you. I get to hang out with the best people in the world, people who have values, people who understand what this is about. And you also let me spout off on the radio, which is kind of cool. I guess I do want to say something here. Obviously, I don't have anything prepared, because he is sneaky. I want to brag on my friend Alan. I firmly believe that without Alan Gottlieb, it would not have been a Heller decision. And it may not be why. It may not be for the reason that you know, because you talk about a man of vision. 30 years ago or more, Alan said, you know, the scholarship on the Second Amendment is wrong. We don't really have good scholarship. So he started out funding Second Amendment scholarship, and he published it, and he got it out there year after year after year, with papers, with scholarly journals, things that were referred to in the Heller decision. He laid the groundwork, he laid the framework, he put down the foundation when nobody else could even see it. Nobody could see that far out. He saw this 30 years ago. Alan, it is a pleasure and a privilege to be your friend.
Many of you don't know, but Tom is actually my biggest success story, because it was at a SHOT Show many, many years ago when I was at the time chairman of the board of the Talk America Radio Network that I went up to Tom and said, Tom, you need to do a show on guns on the radio. And Tom said to me, it never worked, and I couldn't do that, and it wouldn't go anywhere. And I said, Tom, it will work. You know everybody in the industry. You can get advertisers to help fund it. I have the radio network to syndicate it. And you're the best person out there who could do it. There's only one Tom Gresham out there. He said, well, I don't know. Let me think about it. He went around the SHOT Show floor and talked to some people. And lo and behold, came back. I don't know if it was that day or the next day.
Next morning
and said, okay, it's a go. We're going to do it. 25 years ago. I think he has earned the Lifetime Achievement Award. Thank you, Tom.
All right, important stuff now. Pick up your trash. Hey. Whatever Julianne writes down, I say. It's as simple as that. Please remind people to clean up their trash from the box lunches and point out the trash cans. There are trash cans. We also have cans in the lobby. Thanks. I do what I'm told. Thank you, everybody. The panels for this afternoon are fabulous. I can't wait to see those. Thank you again for everything you do. All right, take a quick break. We'll be back in just a few minutes.